Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 4th and Goal podcast, WVUA 90.7's podcast for all things college football. Today we have a packed episode, plenty to go over. We'll get into the weekend recap. We'll get into the Harsin firing. We'll get into the new college football playoff rankings. We are covering it all today. First, we're going to start off with the recap. We had Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State edged them out 44-31. Really, Ohio State's first challenge of the year. How would you guys say they responded?
I say they really proved themselves to be able to come back and stay close in Beaver Stadium. That place was rocking the whole game. They had, you know, the checkerboard, the white and blue. It's always tough to play in that stadium, especially when the atmosphere's in it. Obviously, for a morning game to be able to score 44 points, I mean, I think they still made a statement even though they were down early in the game a little bit, especially around halftime. It looked like Penn State was maybe going to squeak away with it, but they came back and showed that they were still the top dog in the Big 12.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think it shows even more about how good Ohio State is, especially finishing off that fourth quarter very strong, finishing well.
And, yeah, 28 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that was big, and especially in Beaver Stadium. It's probably one of the toughest places to play in the country easily. And just being able to escape out of that game. I mean, Stroud did not look good, but, I mean, their defense was insane, forcing tons of turnovers. I mean, Clifford was not himself that night.
Yeah, thankfully for Stroud, he has by far one of the best, if not the best, wide receiver core in the country, including Marvin Harrison Jr., who's just been fantastic for them. C.J. Stroud, 26 for 33, 354 yards and a touchdown. I feel like the stats kind of overshoot how he played. I think he played well in the fourth quarter and down the stretch, which is obviously what they needed to win. But throughout, I mean, really, I'd say the first three quarters, he kind of struggled. Penn State kind of had them in a bind. But as for this Ohio State team, they get past Penn State on the road, which has been, I mean, in recent years, probably the team that's had their number more than any other team. So, I mean, is it really a cakewalk for this point for the Buckeyes to get in? Or do you think Michigan's going to pose more of a challenge than Penn State?
I think that Michigan proved that this weekend that they were going to probably provide more of a challenge than Penn State. Although Ohio State's going to have this game at home, it's a rivalry game. It's the game, I think that's what they call it. It's going to be one of those that it's going to probably be loser goes to Rose Bowl, winner goes to playoffs. But I think that Michigan's going to prove that they're going to be a threat with how well they handled their other rival, Michigan State. So,
yeah, I think Michigan's a big threat to them. Going at the end of the season, I think they can – I mean, it won't be an easy game for Ohio State. But, I mean, what Ohio State's offense is doing without – I mean, everybody said last year the best receiver was Jackson Smith and Jigba, but now everybody's saying Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean,
yeah,
just
proving crazy
how deep their receiver room is right now.
Yeah, I think I've said before I'd love to see Bryce Young with that receiving core this year. I feel like that would be the best way to judge the C.J. Stroud versus Bryce Young debate. As for Penn State, Sean Clifford, three interceptions in this one. He looked a little spotty, but – that is unfortunately not abnormal for Penn State over recent years. I think I saw the stat that Sean Clifford is like 0-9 now after the loss to Ohio State against top 10 teams in his career. So, yeah, Sean Clifford not really performing in the big games as well as Penn State fans would probably like from him. Didn't have the
James
worst
Franklin
game.
Huh? James Franklin, I think he's like 1-10
yeah,
and 1-11
exactly,
in top
exactly
10 opponents.
It just seems like Penn State can never get over that hump. They're always going to be that little brother to Michigan or Ohio State in the Big Ten. That's just kind of what it feels like. They're always like the third wheel. They're always going to be left out. And, you know, these are the type of games you got to win if you want to start being taken seriously like that. I mean, that's what Tennessee did this year. That's what teams like LSU that are kind of on the outside of the SEC have to do in like recent years to get over that hump for teams or for the committee and for other teams and coaches to take you seriously. As for Penn State, what are we thinking? As far as their ceiling goes, I still think that they could probably squeak into a New Year's Six Bowl. Obviously, got to win out. What do you guys think?
Yeah, if they win out, they're going to find their way in the Cotton Bowl, and then if Michigan loses twice, you know, they're going to find themselves in a spot where, or Ohio State even loses twice, they're going to find themselves in a position where maybe they're competing for the Rose Bowl, most likely probably Cotton Bowl, or even if they don't get New Year's Six, they'll probably get the best non-New Year's Six bowl, like Outback or Alamo Bowl or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, Illinois sneaky. They could maybe make a New Year's Six bowl. Maybe. I mean, it's probably up to either Big Ten teams make a pick. New Year's Six would probably be either Michigan, Ohio State, or it'll be Illinois or Penn State. And then whoever doesn't get that, I'll probably get the Citrus Bowl and Outback Bowl.
Yeah. As for Penn State, they have Indiana on the road, Maryland, Rutgers on the road, and then Michigan State. So it's not far-fetched at all to say that they're going to finish the year 10-2. Really, probably their biggest test is Maryland, maybe, or Indiana on the road. But that's a great season for James Franklin and the Nittany Lions. Moving on to our next game. In the evening, we had Georgia handle Florida 42-20 without that little third-quarter skip. Did Georgia look like the best team in the country Saturday?
No, because they had that third quarter skip. I think that Georgia's had like three games this year that they have shown that they're vulnerable and susceptible, that they could have lost any of the three games. Missouri, they could have lost to Auburn, they could have lost to Kent State, and they could have lost to Florida. But they were able to pull out and show at the end of the game that they were going to win. Obviously, when it was 28-20, my underdog side of me was like, oh, yeah. But I just don't think that Georgia has enough to say that they're the best team in the country. I think the committee, the College Football Playoff committee, thinks that it's Tennessee. I think that right now, with the momentum that Tennessee has and how they just handle Kentucky, they beat LSU on the road, who now is ranked number 10, which really may be a little high, but it just backs their schedule so much more, and especially if they beat Georgia this weekend, which I think that there's a very good chance of happening. We're all going to find out who number one is this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think Georgia's probably, I mean, it's probably 1A, 1B, Tennessee, Georgia, Ohio State, 1A, 1B, 1C. I mean, they're all pretty evenly matched. I think just Tennessee is probably only number one right now based off their resume, off their wins over Alabama, LSU, Kentucky. I mean, strength of wins is probably holding that up.
Yeah, I don't think that the argument can be made that Tennessee has the best resume out of the three, and I think that the committee sees that and agrees, obviously. And as for Georgia's resume, that 49-3 win against Oregon is looking about as good as it probably will look all season. Like, that it's actually crazy to think that they dominated at that point. But outside of that Oregon game, really the only quality wins, if you look at their schedule, you see for them the rest of the year have been at South Carolina, obviously a dominant win. I would give it a quality win. Yeah. And then same, even Florida at home, or not at Florida home, on a neutral site, basically at Florida, it feels like, because it's in Jacksonville. I would call that a quality win as well. I feel like any time playing in that kind of Florida atmosphere will be a quality win. But, you know, Georgia has had their slip-ups, and I mean, their defense is kind of what's holding them together in some of these games, and now Nolan Smith is going down as they play one of the greatest college football offenses we've seen in recent years. So it'll be great to see that big matchup Saturday. We'll get into that later, though. As for now, we're going to move over to the ACC, where Wake Forest got absolutely slaughtered by Louisville. Louisville just killed them in that game, and really just clamped up Sam Hartman as well, which not a lot of people saw coming at all. And then Syracuse dominated at Notre Dame. They're kind of spiraling down after that Clemson win. It kind of felt like they gave it everything they had in that game against Clemson, and ever since then, you know, kind of collapsing. And that poses the question, is the ACC collapsing with Syracuse and Wake Forest going down and NC State obviously just not the same as they were at the start of the year with the loss of Devin Leary, or were these teams just kind of overrated from the jump?
I mean, I think that most people probably expected the ACC to kind of sort its way out by the end of the year. Obviously, the polls are going to do their rankings with what's going on each week, which means they're probably a little bit overrated, but I think, even 3 weeks ago when we started this show, we all thought it was going to be Clemson, UNC as ACC championship, and it's just proving that that's going to be what it is more and more each week. Obviously, big game against Notre Dame this week. Clemson could drop that one, but I think that still states that ACC championship is Clemson, UNC. the ACC has been very struggly the last few years too, outside of Clemson. So
yeah, I mean, I think the ACC is struggling. I mean, they were high on. I mean, Wake Forest 4 turnovers in that game against Louisville. Not a very good performance by Sam Hartman at all. I mean, Louisville was not. They had shades of flashes with Malik Cunningham, but they weren't really. I mean, they were not really a sexy team. But Syracuse falling apart. I mean, I could have saw that coming. Maybe. I mean, after giving it their all against Clemson, and I think ACC collapse. I mean, Miami not shaping out well. I mean, as everybody predicted, the regular season. Florida State kind of falling off after their 4-0 start. When your top teams, like your top programs in that conference, are not performing, I mean, it's not going to look good for your conference.
Yeah, and top dog of the conference, Clemson, is probably not too happy about the Syracuse and Wake Forest losses as well, especially them losing in the fashion that they lost. I think that says a lot more. Like Wake Forest and Sam Hartman coming out and just laying an egg against Louisville, and then Notre Dame winning against Syracuse, I think, on the road as well.
I still think that Clemson win over NC State still is pretty big because they had Devin Leary.
Yeah, they did have Devin Leary then, yeah.
At the time, I think that's still a big win. Maybe the committee will keep. I mean, maybe that's why Clemson's 4. But who knows?
Yeah, you got to factor in that NC State with Devin Leary is obviously a different team. It's like a potential first round QB. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It sucks for the ACC because in recent years, you know, they catch a lot of slack. They catch a lot of slander. And you know, when weekends like this happen, when you're second and third best teams in the conference just get absolutely dogged by the like bottom feeders and then Notre Dame, it kind of proves those people's point. And then you even start to get into the conversation of does ACC even really deserve to be called a power conference at this point?
I think they still deserve to be called a power conference because they still can compete with, especially like Pac-12 teams, Big 12. I think Clemson obviously is their big front runner, and I think without Clemson, you could probably make that argument. Since they have Clemson, they have UNC. Notre Dame's played in the ACC a couple years. They've had years where it's been the ACC's been good. It's just they just seem to kind of beat up on each other and lose weird games every single year. So
yeah,
I think the ACC. I think it is a power conference, but it needs its dogs back from early 2000s, like Florida State and Miami. That will really
yeah.
Lose
they,
that.
Yeah, they need Florida State.
They need both of the Florida teams to get back up.
And thankfully for the ACC, Florida State looks like they're trending in that direction at least, right? UNC is a program that's been on the rise, and you know they're a good team this year. I don't think they're getting a lot of respect just because of how bad their defense is. I think the committee and you know most voters know that UNC is not really going to compete against a top dog team with that kind of defense. It's pretty bad. Moving on to the next conference. Speaking of the ACC beating each other up, this is a conference that's also known for doing that as well. The Big 12. This is a prime example of that. A lot of talk about Oklahoma State and TCU being a clear favorite for the Big 12 championship. K-State said not so fast with their backup quarterback beat OSU 48-0. Now I got to ask the question, is it going to be a K-State TCU rematch in the Big 12 championship?
I think at this point, after a loss like that, it would be really hard to say, especially if Kansas State drops one more game to Texas this weekend or whoever. It'd be really hard to say that Oklahoma State would deserve that spot after that type of loss. Especially when Martinez is back, it just feels like it would be a whole different. It could have gotten worse. Obviously, Kansas State defense played really well, but Spencer Sanders just did not look comfortable at all in the pocket that whole game. He just didn't look like he was in the right mindset.
Yeah, I think it would take something to happen, a big shakeup. TCU, K-State would have to drop a couple games. I mean, I think K-State it will be the decider if that rematch were to happen. I mean, if K-State can win out, they'll definitely be a K-State-TCU rematch. I don't think anything's going to be holding them back.
And yet, when you look at these teams' futures and their future schedules, it's kind of hard to predict the games that they're going to slip up in or the games that they're going to win. Like Oklahoma State, they have at Kansas. Iowa State, Bedlam against Oklahoma, and then West Virginia. And what's weird is they could go 4-0 in those games, but they could also go like 2-2 in those games. So it's really hard to tell how these Big 12 teams are going to shape up. One team that has not had that slip up yet, however, is TCU. TCU just seems like they kind of edge past every team they play. They look rough against West Virginia for the first half, ended up with a nice 10-point win. You know, last week they had K-State where they were getting demolished and came back, scored 28 unanswered for the win. Week before that, down by 17 to Oklahoma State, ended up with a win in double overtime. How much time is left for TCU? Like, is TCU's time coming? Can y'all sense it?
Yeah, it's coming in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I mean, everything's just been going their way. It's not going to continue to happen over that over a 12-game stretch. I mean, quarterbacks getting hurt, just inching out of road wins. I mean, I think they're going to have a slip-up at some point.
Yeah, they're going to go to DKR, and it's a complete different game than any other road game they've played this year.
It almost feels like their slip-up, whenever they do have one, will be a blowout. Like, it almost, yeah. You get the vibe that, you know, kind of like the K-State game. If K-State didn't have Martinez go down, K-State probably wins that game by, I mean, four touchdowns we're talking about.
Same with, I mean, Oklahoma State.
Yeah, had their, yeah. Exactly. Oklahoma State had their chance to beat them and just choked when it came down to it. Moving on to some news in the SEC from little brother Auburn. Fires Coach Harsin. The running back coach, Cadillac Williams, will step in as the interim for the rest of the year. How do you guys feel about this? Was this the right move to fire Harsin, like, right now at this point in the season?
I think it probably was the right move. I think any time when you're at a home SEC conference game and the entire – there's probably, like, 40 – the stadium's half full at a home – you know that there's some sort of problem. And even for the fans, the players, just getting momentum swing – Auburn obviously is a very historic program with national championship winning teams even over the last, you know, 15-10 years. It would be good to see them be competitive again, and as much as I like beating them, I'd much rather beat them when they're number five than when they're a four-win team. But I think that just as a fan base, I think Auburn is maybe going to hopefully trend upwards. As much as I hate to see Auburn win, I also want them to be good. So our win against them is more respectable. But I think that's the right move to probably fire him at this point, especially over the struggling seasons Auburn has had lately.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was probably the right move. I mean, you could sense it was coming at this point since, I mean, that's day, I mean, hours before, I mean, they fired him, and then hours later they hired a new AD. They did not want to put that new AD shoes to first task to fire the coach. They want his first task to be to hire the coach. Hire a new coach. I mean, they didn't really give Harsin a fair chance, I would say. I mean, his recruiting wasn't very good. I mean, he probably didn't really fit in with
the
culture.
I don't even know if he was, like, top 10 in the SEC
this
last year for recruiting. They were on the border of it.
Yeah, I don't really think he fit in with down in the South, especially couldn't fit in with the recruiting and everything.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, I feel like. Obviously, recruiting is huge, especially in the South. And I just don't think Harsin had that in him. It's a tough thing to see, especially because it felt like as the season went on this year, he kind of lost grasp of some of his players.
Yeah.
You saw last year some of his like wide receivers are transferring, and now it's happening again this year. Auburn just had their best wide receiver announce that he was going to enter the transfer portal after this season. Normally, I would be against this mid-season type of firing. I don't, especially this late into the year, it's almost like, what's the point? You know, at this point in the year, they have four games left and they're basically guaranteed to just kind of win one more against Western Kentucky, and that'll probably be it. That'll probably be a 4-8 team, unless they maybe pull off an upset against Miss State. But I don't know. As someone that was in Auburn this weekend, at that game, in that atmosphere, it was just like you would think that Auburn fans got a win instead of losing by double digits at home, the way they were reacting to the Harsin firing. But anyways, we're going to move on to the player of the week. We're going to go through this one pretty quick. I had Drake May out of North Carolina. He had a fantastic game, 34 for 44, 388 yards, 5 touchdowns, to go along with 61 rushing yards in the UNC Big W against Pitt. UNC is now 7-1, climbing up in the rankings, and they are basically guaranteed the spot in the ACC championship, so they'll be the team that gets a shot at Clemson probably.
Yeah, I'm going with Caleb Williams, 31 for 45, 411 yards, 5 touchdowns. Maybe not against the best opponent, best defense of Arizona, but anytime you're getting up near 70% completion and throw 5 touchdowns, 400 yards, you know, that's going to be a game that is going to get talked about. And Caleb Williams has been playing well all year. This is probably his best game so far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to show some respect to the defense out here. I'm going to JT Tuimalu out of Ohio State. He had 6 total tackles, 2 sacks, 3 tackles for losses. He also had 2 interceptions, 1 he took to the house. I mean, putting on for the defense.
Basically, like, felt like he won them that game. Yeah. Kind of. He was huge. He was their best player by far. Is that the first defensive player of the week on the show?
I believe it is.
I think that it is.
It could be.
We gotta work on that. We gotta be better. I'm sorry, defense. All right, this next segment, this is gonna be a fun one. On the hot seat, I'm gonna list a coach. We have about 5 of them, I think. And we're just gonna talk about, are they on the hot seat or not? And we're gonna start off right in the Big 12. Matt Campbell of Iowa State, he is 45-39 and he's in his 7th season. I feel like Matt Campbell is kind of doing this to himself. Iowa State's having a down year. They've lost a lot of close games. But I feel like Matt Campbell has built this culture up at Iowa State so much that it's almost like they can't really have these kind of seasons. They don't have the patience for these kind of seasons, especially with Iowa State. This has been pretty good the last 2 years especially. I would say that Matt Campbell's probably on the hot seat right now.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he's probably on the hot seat. He's probably not going to get fired. I think they're probably going to give him another year, especially with how good Iowa State's been the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Just one slip-up year maybe, but if they're trending downwards, they're probably going to get rid of him next year. But if they have another bounce-back year and are ranked, and he's probably fine. But he's probably on the hot seat. He's not going to get fired, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be fine for now. I mean, he's getting looked at for other jobs. I mean, I think he's fine.
Oh, yeah, he's a good coach. No doubt he's a good coach.
I don't think in Iowa State would really fire him because I don't really know if they could get anybody better than
that's
that.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I don't know if they had the money like that. But I think he'll be good for now. Maybe, I mean, this year there's a lot of coaching available, vacancies available, so I don't think they'll be looking to fire him this year.
Yeah, first year without probably the best quarterback in the program's history, Brock Purdy as well. I don't know. Matt Campbell's getting some looks, though, from other teams that want him to come in and build the program like he did at Iowa State. So I could see it being kind of a thing where they, like, maybe mutually part ways this offseason.
I mean, it just depends where
and
the money's coming
if
from.
He does stay, I feel like he'll be on a really short leash next year. Like, if you see Iowa State drop, like, 1 or 2 games in the first 4 weeks next season, he could be out. Pretty early next year. Moving on to our next one. This one's going to be a little bit controversial. We have Billy Napier out of Florida. He's in his first year, so I'm not going to say that he's on the hot seat yet. Really funny clip came out after a Florida press conference this week where a reporter was quoted saying something along the lines of, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be here longer than Billy Napier. So there's some talk inside the program that, you know, potentially they're not happy with how Florida has been this year. They've underperformed a little bit, but also the schedule that Florida has had has been, you know, not a cakewalk at all. Obviously, don't think he's on the hot seat yet. He's 4-4, obviously, like I said, in his first year. But it's just like Matt Campbell. This is a guy that's on a short leash. Like, if Florida has another, like, 6-6, 7-5 year, even maybe, like, 8-4, he could be gone next year.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say because they've had to play Georgia and Utah, 2 top 10 teams when they played them. Georgia was number 1 when they played them. It's just a very tough schedule. If you take those games out and the LSU game, another really tough game now that shows a lot better on their schedule strength. I mean, they haven't been playing terribly. They've been playing those teams well. They've just not been able to come out with the wins. And I don't know if you can blame Billy Napier for that or if that's just, you know, but in a first year with that schedule, he's probably on the hot seat, but I think he's probably be similar. If they keep losing games, though, he's probably out.
Yeah, I'd say he's fine first year. First year, I'd say you're just trying to get your culture in. You're trying to get your guys into the program. I mean, second year is a big, big year for them because Florida's one of the top programs in the country. They always, I mean, they've we've won it all, so their fans expect that. But I think, I mean, he's recruiting great. I mean, I think they have a top 10 class coming in for the 2023s. I mean, so he's recruiting good. He's been securing, locking down the state of Florida and recruiting. So just bring in those freshmen. I mean, if they can have that impact, then I could see Florida, you know, he can get off the hot seat real fast.
Yeah, one thing worth noting, though, about this season for Florida is that they haven't been winning convincingly. They actually only have one of their four wins by more than a touchdown. So they beat Utah by 3, South Florida by 3, and Missouri by 7. And their only win by more than a touchdown was against Eastern Washington, an FCS team. So this is a Florida team that's really like a few points away from being a one-win team. But I will say that I think that I am confident that Billy Napier will turn it around and Florida will at least be competitive at some point in his tenure. I was high on this hiring when he came in, so I'm going to have some patience with him as well.
Yeah, I also forgot to mention the Tennessee game as well.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you can't expect him to win Tennessee, and they actually gave Tennessee a shot,
Georgia,
too.
And Utah, it's just...
I mean, they got the onside kick at the end against Tennessee, and it was a chance to win that game.
They put up a great fight against Tennessee, so...
Yeah.
Next coach, though, this is about as hot of a seat as you can have. This is Jimbo Fisher from Texas A&M. He's 37-19, great record, obviously, but he's in his fifth year, and Texas A&M is horrible this year. It feels like 3-5, they might be the worst team in the West, SEC West. I think they probably are the worst team in the SEC West. They're rough, man. They're rough this year, and it feels like the entire fan base is against Jimbo as well, and I think that's going to be a really big thing for Texas A&M and Texas A&M boosters that would kind of help in his buyout. That would be massive.
Yeah, I think a lot of people expected Texas A&M to be competing with Alabama for that West spot.
Yeah, this is like a preseason 6-9 team number, or something like that.
And they just weren't that team that everyone thought that they were going to be. Especially after last year, they beat Alabama. They have the recruiting class. They had all the, you know, Jimbo and Saban going at each other like on their own coaching shows, and it just fell apart for A&M. So I think that he is probably the hottest of all the hot seats on this list, but it'll be interesting. If A&M wins out, he might be able to stay with the recruiting class he has coming in, but if he leaves, all those recruits are going elsewhere.
I mean, that buyout is way too big. I think $90 million is his buyout, something, right? Maybe $95
million. Yeah, it's somewhere in that range.
I think he might be safe just for this year. Who knows, though? Texas oil money is pretty big.
Yeah, they got that's what I'm saying. The boosters, they could be coming in clutch.
I mean, they could fire him, but I don't know who they're – I mean, maybe they go get – there's way too many coaching vacancies available this year. I don't think another –
And not enough, like, applicants, it feels like. It feels like a lot of these teams are going to end up having to hire, like, within the program probably.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next one, we have Neil Brown of West Virginia. He is 20-23 in his fourth season. This is a West Virginia team that looked really good in the first game of the year against Pitt, wasn't able to get the win in that one, and have just been really down since then. And this was a guy that was on the hot seat coming into the year, and it's only gotten hotter for him. West Virginia is 3-5. They do have a nice win against Baylor this year, but they got absolutely mauled by Texas Tech. They got beat pretty easily against Texas. They lost to Kansas. It's just not looking good for West Virginia. And if you look at their schedule, they still have K-State and Oklahoma State to play this year. So West Virginia is not going any better than 5-7 this year, probably more along the lines of 4-8 even. What do you guys think about Neil Brown's future?
Yeah, I think West Virginia has had some good teams before Neil Brown, and maybe even at the beginning of his time, they had a couple good teams. I think that it's probably just his time to go. Usually programs with third, fourth year, if you can't figure it out, they move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think he's probably done after this year, if I had to guess. If I had to get, I mean, 20-23 in four seasons, probably not going to cut it for the country roads people up there.
Oh.
I mean, they got it tough. The Big 12 is not really easy for them because they're traveling. I mean, they're having to travel probably cross country for almost every road game. But, I mean, the home field advantage is still pretty big for them.
Yeah, and going down to the West Coast for our last contestant here on the Hot Seat Show, we have David Shaw of Stanford. This might be a surprising one to some people. Stanford is, or he is 96-50 in his 12th season now at Stanford. He has been there for, it feels like as long as I've been watching college football, and probably is right. He has had some fantastic Stanford seasons. Stanford's had a couple of Rose Bowls under him, I think. And this is a Stanford team that was really good at the start of like the 2010s and even moving in like to some of the middle years of the 2010s as well. But now this is a Stanford team that hasn't made a bowl game in 3 years, and they're rough this year as well. I think that David Shaw was on the hot seat going into this year, and I just like Neil Brown, I think it's only gotten hotter. I feel like it's probably David Shaw's time to go at Stanford.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he's probably going to, it's going to be like a mutual part ways.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think they're going to be like, too. You're fired, because they've had so much.
You can't fire David Shaw. Like he brought this Stanford program up. He's probably one of the best, if not the best coach in Stanford history.
Yeah, I mean, he's brought them to what, 3 or 4 Rose Bowls, so many talented players like McCaffrey and Heisman.
Andrew Luck,
yeah. Some really good years where they've been in the top 5. But it just seems like some of these West Coast schools are struggling with finding new recruits, especially in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that's not his fault, but I think that Stanford and him, you can't fire him.
Yeah, you can't. I agree.
I think they maybe part ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be a mutually part ways kind of thing. I don't think, I mean, he's too much of a legend there to really fire him. And, I mean, Stanford's got tough. They're a tough school to get into. I mean, they're a smart school. I don't know if they really have, like, the basis to
exactly.
Get out.
I don't think, like, that football is prioritized for the University of Stanford, which could be the reason that they end up sticking with David Shaw through the down years.
I have another name that we could add to this hot seating. I want your thoughts on Mike Norvell at Florida State.
I think Mike Norvell's good. I think he's good. Like, this is a Florida State team that's trending up. I mean, they beat LSU. That LSU win is looking like way more impressive now that the committee ranks them that high.
I mean, if they lose to Miami this week, I think he might.
Oh, there's no way they lose to Miami, though.
I don't think they lose to Miami.
I just don't think so either.
I think they stick with him because he's got a good recruiting class coming up.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's what's keeping him there. If he had a bad recruiting class,
if he doesn't
gone.
Have a good finish this season, I think, I mean, their first call, I mean, their only, Florida State's only call would have to be to Coach Prime. And I think he would.
It would have to be. Like, that would, not only would it have to be, but I think that they would be the clear front runner as well, like, as far as his interest goes. But yeah, I don't know about Mike Norvell. I think that Mike Norvell's good where he's at. I think that Florida State's gonna ride it out with him, just because of how, like, you know, how Florida State's played this year. I think they've competed in games that Florida State hasn't normally been competing in the last few years leading up into this year. And speaking of LSU being ranked 10th in the college football playoff rankings, we're going to dive into these real quick. So it went 1 Tennessee, 2 Ohio State, 3 Georgia, 4 Clemson, 5 Michigan, 6 Bama, 7 TCU, 8 Oregon, 9 USC, 10 LSU. How do you guys feel about the rankings?
I feel like that's probably exactly how I would have drawn it up.
Exactly, really.
I think that it's hard to say that LSU shouldn't be 10 because they beat Ole Miss and then their losses were to Tennessee. Who else? The Florida State loss doesn't look great.
But
it was,
know,
the, it was the first game of the year.
Just such
under
a weird loss,
coach.
Too. Like, missed, blocked extra point when they had all the momentum in the game. They probably would have won that in overtime if that extra point went in, but coulda, woulda, shoulda. So,
I mean, they should be ranked ahead of Ole Miss because they beat
exactly,
Ole Miss.
Exactly. By a lot, too.
Yeah.
I think that they're
in the right spot. TCU's in the right spot, although I think they're going to fall out. Oregon, USC are probably in the right spot. Bama at 6 is in the right spot right now. I just maybe would shuffle. I mean, I don't know if I'd change anything in the top 4. I think right now with Tennessee's momentum, they should be 1. Ohio State 2, Georgia 3, Clemson 4. I think that's, maybe I would put Michigan at 4, but I mean,
Clemson, Michigan, the fight for four is really close.
I think
that Clemson has a better resume, though, than Michigan.
Yeah,
right,
they're
going
to let that settle out in the Ohio State-Michigan game.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing that people have to realize is that these rankings don't matter. Like,
yeah, they're not
going to
matter.
They don't matter at all right now.
Like, right now, like, any of these teams, especially the undefeated ones, Bama at 6, TCU at 7. TCU, if they go undefeated, are going to be in the – in the
playoff. Yeah.
And if Bama wins SEC championship at 6, one of Georgia or Tennessee is going to lose this game, obviously, this weekend. Bama at 6, is they could play in for the 3 seed.
Yeah.
And be in.
I mean, they could be as high as 3 or 2. I mean, SEC, having that SEC champion is automatic. And SEC Big Ten champions, these are probably the only 2 seeds.
Yeah, that's basically your 2 auto bids. I mean,
yeah. I don't know how much I would change within the actual
unless
top
for
10.
Some crazy reason like Illinois wins the Big Ten. But yeah, I will say one thing that I can appreciate about the committee is having Alabama at 6 over TCU, and a lot of they've got a lot of hate for that. But you know, I think the committee. Has almost like a betting mindset when they go into these rankings, because it's like if you had to bet Alabama TCU play on a neutral site, if you had to bet your entire house, your everything on it, who are you putting your money on?
Not Sonny Dykes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not putting my money on TCU there, and I think that that's kind of like almost the mentality that the committee has, and I appreciate that a lot.
A lot of people just want to see Alabama go down.
Yeah. And that's what I think it was Joey Galloway on ESPN said during the show. He said he said, like, if I'm TCU, I'm in shock right now, and I'm looking at the committee like, what did we do to deserve this? Like, I just don't think that this is like an unfair treating for a TCU team. I don't know, but I do know that I would most definitely take Alabama in a game against TCU. I feel like Alabama is probably closer to Clemson and Michigan than to TCU, Oregon, USC.
Yeah.
And I think that most people could and should probably agree on that. And I would say the same thing about TCU. I think that TCU is closer to Oregon and USC and LSU than they are to the top 6.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big debate was TCU, Alabama, but... Everybody, I mean, it's too early. These rankings really don't matter.
Exactly. Really especially when you have Tennessee, Georgia playing each other, Ohio State, Michigan playing each other, Bama, LSU each playing each other.
Everyone's like, going to jump up a spot. Yeah. They should jump up a spot, at least in the top 6, whoever loses this game.
Oregon, USC don't play each other in the regular season, but could be playing each other in the Pac-12 championship. It's a very real possibility. I would say that my only just outright complaint would probably be LSU being 10. I don't think that they're the 10th best team in the country. I think they're like 15th in the AP poll. But I do agree with the logic that if you're going to have Ole Miss at 11 and LSU somewhere in the top 15, you can't have Ole Miss over LSU with the margin of victory that LSU had, and it was recently. I think I'd probably give UCLA the 10th spot. I mean, they just had their first slip up, and they've looked really good other than that. And, you know, they didn't even play. It's not like they didn't show up against Oregon, you know. They gave Oregon a run for their money. I think that I would probably have UCLA at that 10th spot. That's the only real complaint I have. A lot of people were complaining about Clemson being at 4 with the struggles that they've had this year. But if you're going off straight-up resumes, Michigan has had one of the weakest schedules in the entire – I mean, out of any of these teams in this top 10, you could say that Michigan's probably had, like, the weakest schedule out of all of them. So, and even same goes for Ohio State. Ohio State's had a really weak schedule as well. But especially Michigan with how bad their non-conference schedule was. I know they played like Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn, I think it was, like to start off the year. And that alone is like 3 of probably the bottom 10 teams in college football, or bottom 25 teams at least in college football. So I think that's the main thing that propelled Clemson into the 4 spot. Yeah, and Clemson has a pretty easy schedule ahead of them. They got through their gauntlet as well.
Don't be sleeping on this week's game, though.
Yeah, that is a good one. Hey, even Vegas isn't sleeping on it. Clemson's only favored by 4 right now. So.
Vegas knows that it's tough to play at Notre Dame.
Yep, as I always say, Vegas has the script. So if they say that it's going to be four, then they know that it's probably going to be a close one. Here's a little bit of trivia for y'all, sticking with this. Only seven different teams have ever been number one in the college football playoff rankings. Five of the seven have been SEC teams. Let's try to name them.
Mississippi State, LSU, Alabama,
Georgia,
Tennessee.
Bang, right there. And then the other two should be pretty like self-explanatory.
Florida.
Clemson, Ohio State.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you said SEC.
Non-SEC. Yeah, Clemson, Ohio State. There you go.
That was not.
Great moment there, Brandon. All right, going into our Week 10 preview, we got our dog of the week, our underdog of the week. We probably should start keeping record of these. We need to start keeping track. I think I might go through and look at all our old underdogs and, like, make the record. This week I have Maryland. They're plus 5.5 against Wisconsin on the road. I think that this Wisconsin team's been, like, struggling really bad this year. This is the one game when I was looking through the slate of games, I was like, why is Wisconsin favored in this game? This is a Maryland team that has Talia. He's questionable, but I'm pretty sure that he's going to play. Wisconsin has Braylon Allen. They're going to be running the ball a lot. But I'm going to go with Maryland in this one. They're my dog this week. I like Maryland. This is a team that competed with Michigan as well. Only lost to Michigan by 7.
Yeah, I think my dog of the week, we're going to Touchdown Jesus. We're going to Notre Dame. South Bend, Bold. Indiana.
Bold.
Is going to take down the Clemson Tigers this week. I mean, everybody's been sleeping on Marcus Freeman all year, this and that. Hot seat this, hot seat that. Does he got the Notre Dame mindset in him? I mean, they're quietly 5-3. I mean, did not start the year well. Drew Payne coming in, big-time quarterback. I don't think he started the year. But, I mean, I think Notre Dame's defense has still been, I mean, probably about top 10 in the country, if I had to guess. And, I mean, I think...
As you would expect with their coach, you know. Yeah, big defensive guy.
I don't know. It's probably going to be cold in South Bend at night, 6:30. I mean, under the lights. I mean, miracles happen in that stadium.
Yeah.
Never know.
Miracles do happen in that stadium. Although, I'm going to stick to you with the private school side of things. I think Liberty's going to beat Arkansas.
Wow. Okay.
Liberty, Arkansas.
Hugh Freeze. Charlie Brewer going into Fayetteville.
I thought Arkansas was – I was riding high on them at the beginning of the year, and when I go for underdog, I usually like last week I went Cal, Oregon.
I mean,
Liberty, Arkansas. It's another game that Arkansas's favored a lot, but I think Liberty, they might have a chance.
I mean, their one loss is like a one-point loss to Wake Forest.
Liberty squeak in the college football playoff rankings? I don't think that they did, but I know they were like 23. They were 23 in the AP poll.
Yeah, they just
but, you know, obviously a lot UCF easier to get into the AP poll. Yeah. Yeah, or Oregon State. I know Oregon State got ranked like somewhere in the 20s. I don't hate that pick. I talked about Liberty a little bit last weekend. I think that they're pretty underrated. They're a sleeper to be that like non-group of five that makes a New Year's Six bowl, especially with Cincinnati losing last weekend.
Like Tulane right now.
I would probably bet on Tulane right now, but if Tulane slips up and if Liberty wins this game against Arkansas, I would say that Liberty's probably the favorite then. At that point,
they'll probably go down to the American Athletic Championship, Tulane and UCF.
Yeah, that too.
Or maybe Cincinnati.
I think UCF did squeak in the CFP rankings.
They might be 24.
I think that 24. They did. They are 24? Okay.
Yeah, because that win against Cincinnati.
Yeah, that was a good win. That was a good game as well.
Went down to the wire.
Yeah, it did.
In the bounce
lots
house.
Of turnovers in that
one. Those Gus Malzahn games.
Yeah, a little bit of luck on Gus Malzahn's side as always. Nothing crazy there. Moving into our pick'em, updated records here for you. We got me, myself, Caden, 14-7, tied with Nick for first place, who is also 14-7. After we both had pretty good weeks last week, we both went 6-1. As you know, we pick 7 games every week. And then we have Braden, 10-11, but he's bolder than us. He's just picking the hot ones. Braden's just a better fan than we are.
No, I think I'm just... I'm a big fan of the plus odds, we'll say that.
Yeah.
He's a big upsets guy.
Yeah. A big upsets guy.
He just wants some diversity.
I'm still on the podium.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
He is. He is. Brayden is a top three picker on this show.
Yeah.
And that's what matters.
Bronze.
I still get a trophy.
Yeah.
And I get to spray champagne everywhere after each week.
Yeah. We're going to need some diversity in these picks so me and Nick can get some separation, though, or so that Brayden can come back as well. We're going to start off with a morning game. This one will probably have some diversity just because this is a tough freaking game to pick, man. I would say that this is probably one of the tougher games we've had to pick all year. We got Florida and Texas A&M at Texas A&M, actually. And Texas A&M's favored by 3 in this one. But I'm going to go with the Gators. I think that Texas A&M is really just bad. And I think that a lot of people pick them in these games like this, like they did like against Ole Miss last week, but don't really realize that this team is just not that good. And Florida isn't great, but I wouldn't call Florida a bad team this year. I'm going to take the Gators on the road. I think they get the upset in the morning in College Station.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd have to. I'm gonna go back to Texas A&M.
See, y'all are getting in that trap. Y'all are getting in the trap.
They broke my heart last week. I really did like what I saw from Connor Wiegman, the freshman quarterback. Really did like what I saw. Man, 420 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, Florida's defense is not very good either. And, I mean, Texas A&M was moving the ball downfield all day. I mean, their defense was not making it easy for Jackson Dart. I mean, they had to fight and call just to escape out of Kyle Field. I mean, it's still Kyle Field, even though it's still during the day. I think Devon Achane's going to have a big game. I think the Aggies are going to get out of the dumpster fire. I mean, Jimbo, we'll see another day maybe.
I'm falling into the trap.
You're falling into the trap. Y'all both fell into the trap. That's great. I'm glad y'all
Jimbo,
fell into it.
Jimbo.
Stay in the trap.
Texas A&M needs, I said it last week, Texas A&M needs to win this 11 a.m. game. It's going to be low scoring, that's for sure, because morning games usually tend to be on that path. But Florida has to win this game too. It's just hard to pick. This is a tough one to pick. I thought about it a lot. I'm falling into the trap and hoping that A&M doesn't actually pull a -3 and lose by 3.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those games like Billy Napier needs to win this game, I'd say. Like
so does Jimbo.
He really does. So does Jimbo. Do. Yeah, you're right.
Could be a coach's brawl at the end of the game.
Yeah, they're leaving it all out there. Texas talked a little bit about it being low scoring. Texas A&M needs it to be low scoring. If it's a high scoring game, Texas A&M will not win at all. It's an offense that cannot keep up with other offenses like that.
If this was a later game, I would have taken Florida.
Interesting. So both of my peers here fell into the trap. I made it out. I can see clearly now. This Texas A&M is not good. We're going with the Gators. 2:30, we have, you know, kind of casually the biggest game of the season in college football. We've got Tennessee at Georgia. This is a good one. We could probably make a whole podcast on this game going into it. Georgia, I think, is the line 8 still?
I think so.
It is still 8. I'm not really seeing what Vegas is putting down on that one. I think that, if anything, Tennessee should probably be favored. Maybe even Georgia by like 3 since it's in Athens. But, you know, Tennessee's proved time and time again their offense is just too good. And Georgia, they say defense wins championships, but not if you're playing against an offense that can just straight up score every time. There's some offenses that are so good that they cancel out the defense wins championships kind of saying. And I think that Tennessee once again gets a big win, this time on the road against Georgia. I think that it's going to be a close one, though. I think it's just going to be exactly like the Bama-Tennessee game. I do like Tennessee in this one, though. I think Hendon Hooker has a great game.
Yeah, I'm also going to stick with the big orange. I don't know how they wear that color every weekend, but I'm going to stick with Rocky Top. I think that the momentum is gonna just carry them through that game. I think there are two outcomes to that game, though. I think that it's more likely to be a close game, Tennessee winning, or Georgia's just going to blow them out. It's the same thing we said for Alabama. Because Vegas obviously has them at 8, and they know something. They had Alabama, I think, at -8. Tennessee, it's just, I feel like they're going to find their way in, but they also could be riding so high right now that it could affect them. But I still think that Tennessee's going to come out with it.
Yeah, I mean, the big key for this game is going to be who is going to win the battle in the trenches between Georgia's defensive line, Tennessee's O-line. If they can, Tennessee's offensive line can protect Hendon Hooker, give him time all day, I mean Tennessee might win by this game by a lot. I mean, but if Hendon Hooker's jersey is just has grass all over it, he's taking sacks left and right. I mean, I think that might happen in this game. I mean, I think I'm just going to trust the crowd. I think it's going to be home field advantage at Sanford Stadium. They have not had a big matchup in that stadium in a while. That being said, I'm going to be barking with the dogs. Okay. Sick 'em.
So me and Nick with two different picks to start off. That's good. That's good. That's what we like to see. We talked a little bit about this before the show, Georgia going without Nolan Smith. I think that's kind of what propelled me to take Tennessee in this one. I was on the fence, but leaning Tennessee, and then I see Nolan Smith is out for the rest of the year, and I'm all in on the Vols in this one. Moving on to our next 2:30 game, we have Braden's underdog of the week, Liberty at Arkansas. Arkansas is favored by 13.5. I picked against Arkansas last week as my dog. I picked Auburn to beat them, and Arkansas proved me wrong, and I am now seeing that with a healthy KJ Jefferson, this Arkansas team is actually pretty good and competitive, and I'm going to stick with them this week. I think that they beat Liberty at home. Despite Liberty getting some hype nationally now, maybe a little bit more than Arkansas, I think that Arkansas stays strong at home and gets a dub in this one.
Yeah, I think this game has the potential to be a shootout, an absolute barn burner. I think Liberty is going to keep it close, though. I think it might be a one-possession game going towards the end of the game. But I think Arkansas, KJ Jefferson, I think SEC athletes, I don't see Liberty going into Fayetteville and winning. If it was at Liberty, then maybe. But
the reason I like this game is Liberty has nothing to lose because Everyone's expecting Liberty to lose this game. Yeah. Everyone's like, they're going to go into Arkansas, play an SEC team, their non-Power 5 team. They haven't really been that good in recent years. Like, that's exactly – they're going to go out and they're going to give everything. KJ back is obviously going to be helpful at Arkansas. I just think that there's – I just like that mentality that Liberty doesn't really have anything to lose if they lose this game. They're going to be going all out.
Yeah, and another thing, I mean, last year, Malik Willis, when he was on Liberty, they went to Ole Miss, and Ole Miss just absolutely obliterated.
Exactly.
So I don't know if they...
He didn't even look like an NFL QB in that game as well.
Yeah, I just think that Ole Miss is a better team than Arkansas by a pretty significant amount.
Yeah, and yeah, you're probably right. But moving on to our evening slate, we've got 6 o'clock. Big time game here, another top 10 matchup in the CFP rankings. Bama at LSU. They're playing in Death Valley, also known as Bryant-Denny West, some would call it. Bama's favored by 13 in this one. LSU has not beaten Bama in Death Valley since 2010. It's pretty crazy. I do like Bama in this one.
Do we really have to say who we're going to pick in this game?
Yeah.
I think we're all going to pick Bama.
Yep.
Yeah, no diversity in this game.
I mean, LSU Stadium is literally Bryant-Denny West. I mean, I think that's going to continue. Bryce Young's going to have a big game. I mean, coming off a bye, which will be good for his shoulder. I mean, get some rest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, get some of the receivers. Maybe Tyler Harrell might make an appearance. I mean, who knows? I mean, Eli Ricks
revenge
game.
Yeah.
On Tayshaun Moody.
Oh, man. Didn't even think about
the real
that.
Number,
completely
I mean, number
my
seven
mind.
On number seven mind. Matchup all night. That's going to be a matchup to watch.
Boutte might not catch a pass this weekend with Ricks guarding him. At least Bama fans are hopeful for that. Next evening game, 6 o'clock game. This is a good one. Texas at K-State. Crazy enough, the last time I checked, the line was Texas by 2.5. On the road.
Texas is favored.
Yeah, they are. So, and I am riding with the Horns. Hook 'em. Horns up for this one. I think that Texas pulls off the upset at K-State. I think this is a Texas team that is really good with Quinn Ewers, and I think they proved that. And this is just such a Big 12 thing to happen. K-State beats Oklahoma State 48-0 with their backup, and then turns around and loses at home to Texas the next week. It's just a very Big 12 game to happen. I just have a weird feeling this is a Texas win.
Yeah, I started things off with the cringy team sayings by starting things off with the big orange. And I'm sticking with the color orange. I think that Texas is going to come out on top. Obviously, K-State had a really good game against Oklahoma State. Texas has to win this game to have that momentum against TCU,
yep.
which we're all hoping for the downfall of TCU at some point. We're all kind of betting on that. But I think Texas probably comes out on top. I don't know if it's going to be as close as Vegas is saying. I think Texas maybe wins by a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is coming off a bye. Kansas State's coming off of a huge win. Oh, man, I think it's going to be a coin flip game. I think Adrian Martinez might be back, but I mean, Will Howard's playing good. I mean, I'm just going to ride with the Longhorns this game, hook them.
So three Longhorns picks for that one. That's surprising. All our picks are not going to be the same for this next game, as it's Nick's dog of the week. 6:30 kick. Clemson travels to South Bend to take on the Fighting Irish. Clemson's favored by 4 in this one, and I'm rocking with them. I think that this team's got a lot of momentum. They made it through their really tough gauntlet, and this is kind of a sleeper game. It does have some upset potential. Notre Dame's played Clemson close. Seems like they do always every time they play, but I do think that this is a statement win for Clemson. This is the game that Clemson wins and lets everybody know, okay, like, we are going to be in the playoffs this year. Don't hope for us to lose to one of these inferior ACC teams, or in Notre Dame's case, basically ACC, but independent. But I do think that Clemson gets the win in this one. I think the DJ kind of silences the haters a little bit, silences the Cade Klubnik noise, and DJ, Will Shipley get the win for Clemson on the road at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with my dog of the week, of course, Touchdown Jesus. Notre Dame, Fighting Irish, you're going to take it home. The fans are going to be, students are going to be storming the field at around 10 o'clock at night.
Throw the goalposts in the river.
Probably do that.
I think it's a little far. Bring it to the cathedral.
bring the goalposts into the cathedral over there.
Yeah.
You know, Drew Payne, he's going to have a big game. Marcus Freeman's defense is probably going to, that's going to be the big win right there. They're going to have big, either an interception, fumble, or turnover, something. Turnover on downs, something late.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse has forced like 4 turnovers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Will Shipley, they're going to have to contain Will Shipley. I mean, DJ, I mean, who knows? I mean, Klubnik could come in the second half. Depends if he's struggling. I mean, but I think the Irish are going to have the luck of the Irish in this game.
I'm sticking with the color orange.
Big orange guy.
I did not pick Florida, though. But I think that Clemson is going to win this game. Notre Dame, they've been spotty, so I think that maybe they come out strong, especially against, this is their biggest game. But I think the goalposts do not go anywhere. They do not move.
I think another thing about this Notre Dame team, they have the chance to just play the rest of the way. They have Clemson, USC. They could just ruin their season right there. 2 games.
Yeah.
I mean, Notre Dame probably has nothing to play for, really. I mean, 5-3 losses.
At this point,
decent bowl game or something. But, I mean, they could just play spoiler and just ruin the playoff chances.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick Notre Dame in big games until they officially join the ACC. Like, come on, just do it. Every other sport did it. Why can't football, you know? It's just a pride thing, I guess. But moving on to our last game of the slate, we have 7 o'clock kick. A top 25 matchup, kind of going under the radar, though. Wake Forest at North Carolina State. I am going to rock with Wake Forest in this one. I think that they get a bounce-back win. This is an NC State team that is, you could say, not even that good at all without Devin Leary. They struggled bad against Vautech, a bottom feeder ACC team last week. I think that Wake Forest wins. They're favored by 5. I think they cover that and then some. I think that this is a Wake Forest by 2, maybe even 3 touchdowns in this one.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on this one. I think Sam Hartman, he's not going to have another 4 turnover game. I mean, I agree with 2 touchdown game probably. I mean, NC State's offense is just dead. I mean, they have 0 pulse until Devin Leary. I don't even know if he's coming back the rest of the season. So
yeah, I don't think he is. Yeah, I think he's done.
Yeah, no diversity in this round. It's Wake Forest. I think that NC State's probably without Leary. Obviously, it's just they're a different team. Wake Forest has to have a bounce back win. I think that this is their chance to do it, and they're going to do it.
Yep. And that'll round out the show for us today. Obviously we'll have a great weekend ahead of us, 2 top 10 matchups, including the biggest game of the year. Hope everybody has a good weekend. I'm Caden Johnson.
I'm Braden Friedman.
And I'm Nicholas Elliott.
And this is the 4th and Goal podcast, signing off.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.